This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Millions of people have been displaced as a result of widespread flooding this year across large parts of Somalia, Kenya, Uganda, South Sudan, and Ethiopia.
That's Rael Ombor reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up also. General Ahmed Gaid Salah, the main power player in Algeria, has died. And China has cemented its position as Africa's biggest economic and political partner. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the winner of this month's election, Abdelmajid Tebboune, was widely seen as close to the military chief, and the two were seen warmly embracing at Tebboune's inauguration just 4 days ago. General Ahmed Gaid Salah, Algeria's military chief and the country's de facto leader, after longtime President Abdelaziz Bouteflika resigned, has died at age 79. Gaid Salah was seen as the main power player in Algeria, especially since protesters with his backing pushed President Bouteflika out of office in April after 20 years in power. According to the French news agency, Gaid Salah's death thrusts Algeria into a new political uncertainty as a tumultuous year comes to a close. Protesters who initially praised him for his intervention to force Bouteflika's resignation began to despise the general. He had categorically rejected their key demands of deeper reforms, including the establishment of a transitional institutions and the dismantling of the military-dominated administration. The winner of this month's election, Abdelmajid Tebboune, was widely seen as close to the military chief, and the two were seen warmly embracing at Tebboune's inauguration just 4 days ago. Tebboune has declared a full week of mourning, an indication of the military chief's importance. Gaid Salah is being replaced on a temporary basis by General Said Chengiria, according to state radio. Gaid Salah had suffered heart problems in the past, Algerian media reported, but his death came as a shock to most Algerians. China has cemented its position as most African countries' biggest economic and political partner. It's a complex and nuanced relationship. This week, we are starting a series of reports by VOA's Darren Taylor in Johannesburg. Today, he looks at how the Eastern giant also has rapidly expanded its media presence on the continent with Radio China International and the Star Times multi-channel TV service carrying good news stories about China and Africa to millions of people.
China's respected for its economic growth, but not for its human rights record. Under the Chinese Communist Party, the government for decades has jailed critics and severely restricted media. The media organization Reporters Without Borders, or RSF, says the Chinese government is exporting its media model to stop journalism that investigates its activities around the world.
It is also to create a new world media order in which journalism would be replaced by state propaganda.
Cedric Alviani wrote an RSF report on China's attempts to influence how international media portray it. He says China's investing in foreign news organizations and buying vast amounts of advertising in global media to counter negative coverage. Alviani gives the example of the China Watch supplement, which is periodically inserted into internationally renowned publications, including the New York Times.
When you are subscribing to one of the world's leading newspapers, you might expect that every content they carry is reliable, and some readers might easily be misled when they open the China Watch in the middle of such a reference newspaper because the content is pure propaganda.
Newspapers that carry China Watch do declare that its content is provided by the China Daily, which is owned by China's Communist Party. But Alviani says many readers miss this fine print. China also is building radio and TV stations on the continent and funding African media. In so doing, China joins the United States and European powers, such as Britain and France, in building a media presence on the continent, both government-owned and commercial operations. The U.S. government, for instance, funds Voice of America. Alviani says China's media expansion is less focused on covering African events than Western outlets, and more about promoting the interests of the country's Communist Party. Professor Herman Wassermann of the University of Cape Town's Media Studies Department says the Chinese media blueprint is not well suited to Africa, where many democracies are fragile. But he says Chinese media are attractive to some Africans tired of Western portrayals of their homelands as little more than places of poverty, dirt, disease, and war. Wassermann says China's media presence in Africa is getting bigger, but for now, its products aren't popular, especially in countries with vibrant independent media.
It's maybe not in the first instance directed at stamping out press freedom in Africa, but it is aimed at trying to create a more positive picture of itself. And yes, trying to limit criticism of itself in Africa.
RSF says this greater presence includes financial support for African media operations, which are unlikely to bite the hand that feeds them. It uses the example of a South African writer whose column for the Independent Online portal was ended shortly after he criticized Beijing's treatment of China's Uyghur Muslim community. A Chinese company has a 20% stake in the Independent. Wassermann, though, isn't convinced by the RSF's argument.
One has to ask the question, firstly, is this a direct influence by China? Did somebody in Beijing pick up a telephone and call them and say, sack that guy? I doubt that. I would caution against the sort of view that there's a direct line between China and Africa, and the influence is much more subtle.
He thinks African media companies with Chinese funding might self-censor, cutting anything they think might offend Beijing. RSF says more overt attempts by Chinese authorities to repress African journalists include training African officials to spy on them and providing equipment to monitor the internet and cell phones. Wassermann agrees this is happening, but makes the point that some African leaders have long repressed the media in their countries. He says the RSF report underestimates African media and civil society.
Often these sort of alarmist reports sketch a very sort of passive and monolithic picture of Africa, as if Africans again are just sort of passively waiting for China to walk over us. You know, I think there's a great deal of resistance against any attempts to stamp out press freedom. So I don't think Africans...
But Wassermann says news media around the world are under financial pressure, and if Beijing or any other source offers aid, it can be difficult to turn down, no matter the strings attached. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
As the Earth heats up, weather and climate patterns are changing dramatically around the globe. Africa felt the effects of those changes in 2019, experiencing cyclones, droughts, and unstoppable rains that jeopardize livelihoods. From Nairobi, Rael Obbo reports on what lies ahead for the continent.
62-year-old David Kemboi sorts out dry maize stalks on his 21-hectare farm in Kenya's Trans Nzoia County. Kemboi turns the stalks of what could have been a bountiful harvest into silage for feeding his 15 herd of cattle. He says the heavy rains that have rocked different parts of eastern Africa caused the crops to fail.
At a time of growing crops, we expected an optimum yield, like we had invested heavily in all the crops that we grew. But unfortunately, we were not able to get a good harvest out of all that, which means a lot of money was just thrown into the docks, and we didn't get anything out of that. And we do not expect to get anything elsewhere other than from this land. And because we depend on rain-fed agriculture.
Trans Nzoia County, where Kemboi settled after retirement in 2017, is known for growing predominantly maize, Kenya's staple food. Apart from the excessive rain, farmers in the area have faced pests and disease challenges.
Every time we go to harvest the maize, there is rain. And this maize, when rain don't, it gets wet and it gets spoiled very quickly. That when there's adverse effects in growing of maize and also in beans. Beans, the first crop was, we didn't have any harvest at all. It all went bad because of these heavy rains.
Millions of people have been displaced as a result of widespread flooding this year across large parts of Somalia, Kenya, Uganda, South Sudan and Ethiopia. The floods have led to hundreds of deaths. In November, South Sudan declared a state of emergency in 27 affected areas, with close to 1 million people affected. The Kenya Meteorological Department attributes the rain to an irregularity known as Indian Ocean Dipole, an oscillation of surface temperatures of the sea, which brings weather extremes to countries neighboring the Indian Ocean. Bernard Chanzu is the deputy director of Kenya's Meteorological Services. He says nearly all of Kenya has received above average rainfall this year.
In some stations, I can quote like Meru stations, we have seen records which are showing that what has been received is more than 200% of the long-term average. That is what is usually received in the area.
With the levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere climbing to new heights, John Recher, a scientist specializing in climate and agriculture research, says Africans can expect more extremes in years to come.
We will therefore have more effects of climate change affecting the weather patterns, specifically the rainfall patterns. The climate change will be more intense, and therefore the climate variability that is having these extreme events and of the drought and the floods will be more frequent and even more intense going into the future.
The solution for Kemboi and other farmers, according to experts like Recher, lie on adapting to climate change. That, he says, would require help from government and agencies to implement new agricultural practices such as alternative irrigation methods and efficient water storage for farmers. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Trans Nzoia, Kenya.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. For the first time, the World Health Organization says the number of men smoking around the world has dropped, indicating measures to end the global tobacco epidemic are paying off. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
World Health Organization officials call this a major shift in the fight against tobacco, which every year kills more than 8 million people prematurely. Data from 143 countries shows a decline in tobacco use for the first time among men, following a steady rise in the use of this deadly product during the past two decades. During this period, WHO reports 60 million of the world's nearly 1.4 billion smokers have quit the habit. Most of these reductions have been driven by women. However, WHO's Director of Health Promotion, Rudiger Kretsch, says male use of tobacco over the same period has risen by about 40 million.
But now we are seeing for the first time a decline in use, with WHO projecting that there will be at least 2 million fewer males using tobacco in 2020 and 5 million less by 2025. Fewer males using tobacco products means fewer people will suffer the avoidable pain and death that they cause.
Kretsch says the decline in tobacco use shows tobacco control measures work. He says steps such as taxation, banning advertising and marketing, as well as smoking in public places and plain packaging of tobacco products, discourage people from smoking. The report finds approximately 43 million children aged 13 to 15 smoke, with boys using tobacco at twice the rate as girls. It says Southeast Asia has the highest rates of tobacco use, while sub-Saharan Africa has the lowest. WHO says most gains in reducing tobacco use have been made in low- and middle-income countries. While the Americas is the world's best-performing region, it says the European region has the slowest pace pace of decline in tobacco consumption. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Opposition politicians in Africa face tough challenges, including arrest, intimidation, and violence as they struggle to upend decades of rule by the parties that originally brought liberation from colonialism. But their struggle, they say, is not only an African movement, it's a global generational shift towards accountability and a departure from authoritarian leadership. VOA's Anita Powell met with two of the continent's most vocal opposition leaders and reports from Johannesburg.
Being in the political opposition means speaking out against larger forces. But in Africa, it can also mean intimidation, arrest, and violence. This year, longtime ruling parties clinched presidential victories, again, in Botswana, Mozambique, Namibia, Senegal, and South Africa. South African opposition politician Musi Maimane says he fears African regimes are becoming bolder and more dangerous.
The incarcerations that are taking place of opposition leaders, the violence that is taking place, is a deep concern. We're finding that it cannot be that you live in a continent where the leader of opposition in Tanzania is shot just for standing up for something. It cannot be that when you go to Zimbabwe, that in fact members of parliament from the opposition are being kicked out of their country.
That is something that Uganda's Bobby Wine, a musician turned opposition MP, knows all too well. He is running for president against Yoweri Museveni, who has been in power since 1986. And it has been a tough road, paved with intimidation, arrests, and bans on his concerts. Wine says he has trouble even talking to voters in his quest to win the 2021 election.
I cannot be allowed to engage, to interact freely with the public. I'm a member of parliament who cannot be allowed to address his constituents.
Maimane says it is difficult for the continent to split from the powerful ruling parties that often led the battles to throw off former colonial masters.
First, you must be liberated, and then soon after that, you must liberate yourself from the liberators.
And Wine says he's hopeful, but also cynical about how that will go for him.
And we believe we're going to win massively. However, we also suspect that he's going to try to usurp the voice of the people. And my own prediction is that if President Museveni rigs the election right now, the people of Uganda will rise up against him.
Even when elections are fair, opposition parties face a challenge. Maimane's Democratic Alliance won a disappointing 21% in South Africa's recent election, losing to the long-ruling African National Congress. But he says the struggle is bigger than one party or one country.
I think what has become true is that institutional politics is being disrupted all over the world. I think we must realize that the struggle that we're engaged with is generational, but not only that, it must move beyond politics.
The times, along with Africa's demographics, are rapidly changing. And it's time, opposition politicians say, that governments do the same. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Pirates attacked four ships in the harbor of Gabon's capital late Sunday, killing a Gabonese captain and kidnapping four Chinese crew members. Gabon's security forces, assisted by Interpol and other regional forces, are looking for the hostages and their captors. One vessel belonged to Satram, a maritime transport company based in Gabon. Associated Press reports the captain worked for Satram. The French news agency AFP says that two of the ships were owned by Sigapachi, a Sino-Gabonese company that employed the kidnapped crew. The fourth ship flew a Panamanian flag, according to AFP. Attacks in Libreville's harbor are rare, but happen frequently in the surrounding Gulf of Guinea waters. The International Maritime Bureau says 82% of the world's maritime kidnappings happens in the Gulf of Guinea. A brutal one-handed form of boxing in Nigeria known as Dambe is gaining popularity, even though it has left some fighters with multiple injuries and in some cases led to their deaths. Despite the dangers, Nigeria's sport ministry says it is considering promoting Dambe as a national sport. Timothy Obiezu has more from Nasarawa, near Abuja, where a boxer died recently.
Crowds are gathering at this field near Abuja, known in the Hausa language as Gidan Dambe, or boxing house, to watch a big fight. It's being held to honor a boxer who spent years promoting Dambe, a native and brutal form of boxing where one fist is used to strike an opponent and the other one as a shield. Tournament officials crowned boxer Maman Bashir as boxing king.
Honestly speaking, he's my son. I introduce him to the business. And I point him myself that will be a good ambassador with time. And now he fulfills his promise by trying his best to make sure that cultural promotion, especially Dambe, is being promoted in the whole country.
No one knows when traditional boxing started in Nigeria, but it has been in existence for more than 100 years. Unlike in standard boxing, local fighters don't wear protective gear to shield the face and body, raising serious concerns. 2 years ago, a young boxer claimed about a score of his friends died from their injuries from Dambe boxing. Nakede Bako's brother, popularly known as Mijaji, suffered injuries to his head and leg during a fight and died in July 2018.
I was hurt by his death, especially because he left his wife and children behind. I will never get to see him again.
But officials of Nigeria Local Boxing League say boxers are aware of the dangers involved and are appropriately compensated in cases of casualties.
The risks in traditional boxing is the boxers are aware that there is a punch they will give you and you can die. So definitely they have taken it into their mind that they want to do it.
Last Wednesday, another boxer died here in this venue. But despite these concerns, fighters are recruited to join every week.
For me, there's no quitting Dambe. I will continue to fight until the day that God takes me.
Officials of the Nigerian Local Boxing League say they are now introducing medical teams during a match to care for any injuries that may arise. Last week, Nigeria's sports ministry said plans are underway to adopt Dambe as a national sport. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Nasarawa.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nana Akunedo Ajeman Rawlings, the former First Lady of Ghana, reflects on the importance of empowering others and using public office to serve Ghanaian citizens. Nana Akunedo Ajeman Rawlings on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.